Today on my podcast, I'm pleased to introduce to you Dr. Armin Feldman. Dr. Feldman has been a full-time medical consultant to attorneys since 2006. He also works with physicians across the United States, helping them learn how to supplement their income or to provide a replacement for their income by providing pre-litigation, pre-trial consulting services to the legal industry. I think you will be fascinated by the journey that Dr. Feldman has taken from a clinical role to a non-clinical role. He made me aware of a completely new consulting service that physicians can function in. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bedside. I am your host, Dr. Norm Chapin. Beyond the Bedside is a podcast that will help you find a non-clinical role and take your career in new, rewarding, and sometimes unanticipated directions. I'm very happy that you are here to learn about opportunities beyond the bedside. Well, Armin, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing your story with us today. It's very nice to meet you.
Same here, Norm. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So maybe you could start by telling my listeners what your current non-clinical role is. What exactly do you do?
Sure. So I work as a medical legal consultant. And what that means, it's actually something that I started about 13 years ago and have developed through the years. And now really it's a new subspecialty of forensic medicine. And what I do is I consult to attorneys on any kind of medical question that they have in a case. A couple of things that I don't do: I don't act as an expert witness, and I don't participate in medical malpractice cases. All of the work is pre-trial, pre-litigation. It is either in the service of helping the attorney to get a more favorable settlement, and or helping the attorney get the appropriate medical care for their clients and negotiate the medical issues in their cases. All of the work is either in personal injury cases or workers' compensation cases, although a physician in any specialty can learn how to do this work. One of the things that makes this kind of consulting viable and makes it go is that in these areas of the law, probably 9 out of every 10 cases settle. And that's where we come in as medical legal consultants. Anything that we can do to help the attorney, as I said, better negotiate and settle the case for more money and help the attorney with the medical issues in the case, that's something that a lot of attorneys are interested in. Now, not all attorneys think it's the next best thing since sliced bread, but there certainly has been plenty of demand for this work all over the country. Other thing I tell you is that I always work on the side of the little guy going up against the insurance companies. So I'm always working for the injured person. So in personal injury cases, the little guy is the, before the case is litigated, is the client, and then later is the plaintiff. And in workers' comp cases, the little guy is the claimant, the insurance company is the respondent. And so I always work on the plaintiff and or the claimant side. So I am always trying to help the attorney, help the injured person, essentially to get back up on their feet.
It's very interesting. I hadn't realized that this niche of consulting really existed until we started talking. And I would have assumed that your background was in occupational medicine or family medicine, but your background is as a psychiatrist. How did you find this idea, or how did you come up with this idea? What really got you involved in this type of medical legal consulting business?
Great question. It's actually been quite helpful to me, and it's been quite a long time ago, but I did an internship in internal medicine, and then I did a residency in psychiatry. I'm also a psychoanalyst, graduated from the Denver Institute for Psychoanalysis. When I was a much younger man, through social contacts, I was introduced and met a young fellow like me who was a personal injury attorney. He started sending me his cases, and one thing led to another, and my specialty in psychiatry wound up being, which is a little outside of the realm of most normal, you know, things, but wound up being mild traumatic brain injury. And I have seen thousands of people with mild traumatic brain injury, and one thing led to another, and I started a mild traumatic brain injury rehabilitation clinic in Denver. In that clinic, I had other psychiatrists, psychologists, neuropsychologists, biofeedback therapists, psychotherapists, and others working for me. I think we did a great job of helping head-injured individuals get back up on their feet. That led me to opening other clinics around the country, and I wound up opening outpatient head injury rehab clinics all over the country. I was very fortunate, and I was eventually able to sell those clinics, and I was certainly didn't want to retire at that point, and I was thinking about what do I want to do next. As part of that work, I testified as an expert witness really more times than I want to remember on behalf of my patients who were either being cut off of their medical care or offered some pittance of a settlement. It got me to thinking, well, I wonder if I could just consult two attorneys on any kind of medical question that they had in a case. And that turned out to be a good thing, an unexplored niche. And I've developed that now over the years, as I said, into really a new subspecialty of forensic medicine, where I've trained over the past 11 years, I've trained a little over 1,600 physicians around the country to do this. And now there are physicians all over the country doing medical legal consulting, working with PI and workers' comp attorneys, and helping the attorneys to help their clients with the medical issues. So there are a little over 16 different services that I offer and the other physicians offer. But just as an this isn't the thing. The most requested service we have is to provide comprehensive medical summary reports that attorneys use as part of settlement demand letters with our medical opinions and so forth. But just as an example, you know, for years, there have been physicians doing independent medical exams, probably since the 1980s. I think I was the first physician in the country to actually physically sit in and observe the independent medical exams of other physicians. And that would put me into a position, when it's appropriate, to write an IME rebuttal report. So they're very good doctors who consistently do very good IMEs. And for many attorneys, you know, I'm not involved in those cases, although some attorneys will have me sit in on every IME for every one of their clients. But we also know in every community across the country, there are a group of physicians that make either all of their income or most of their income doing IMEs. And these physicians are under tremendous secondary gain pressure. And the fact is, if they don't consistently come down with opinions that favor the insurance position, the insurance companies will find doctors who do. So since I started doing this work, I have, and now other physicians are on the other side of that, making sure that if the IME report just doesn't add up for some reason, we're in a position to do an IME rebuttal.
What percentage of your business falls into that category now? You said most of it is still doing medical summaries, but it sounds like there is a growing interest on the part of the attorneys to protect their client by having someone sit in on the IME. I noticed on your website that you actually had listened to a recording of an IME in one of your newsletters. Is that a common tool that you use rather than attending in person, or do you try to attend in person?
Almost always we attend in person. Mm-hmm. As I said, the service that is requested most is taking a comprehensive look at the entire case. Well, how that works is obviously talk to the attorney, review the medical records, then in every case, no matter what the service is, in every case, then interview the client of the attorney. 95% of the time, do that interview by phone or by Zoom now, and then review the pertinent medical literature. and then take a look at the entire case. And then what our job is to really synthesize all of that data, draw our own opinions. Obviously, we're going to rely on what the treating doctors say and consulting doctors and others say, but to draw our own opinions regarding ongoing medical problems, causation, mechanism of action of injury, functional losses, future medical care and costs, and a whole variety of other things that go into one of these medical summary reports with our medical opinions backed up by evidence from the medical literature. Let me give you an idea of how this works in a practical manner. So now, of course, this doesn't happen to me anymore because attorneys in Colorado know who I am. But when I was starting out, when others start out, let's say I write a report regarding a rotator cuff injury, and there's something in the case that the attorney's trying to negotiate something for their client in the case. And so they ask me to write a report. I write that report. I give my opinions, my back it up with evidence from the literature. And the attorney my reports are not behind the scenes. They're always seen by opposing counsel. They're almost always seen by insurance adjusters. They're often seen by judges, treating doctors, IME doctors, and others. So my report goes over to opposing counsel. Well, what's the first thing opposing counsel is going to do? They're going to look me up, right? So they pick up the phone and they call the attorney that hired me and say, well, wait a minute, why should I pay any attention to this report? Dr. Feldman is not an expert in rotator cuff injuries. And so what my attorney is going to say is, well, look, Dr. Feldman acts as a medical consultant for me in all my cases. And if we can't get this settled, if we can't get this thing set, this issue in the settlement taken care of, and you force me to take this case to trial, when I hire my retained orthopedic expert, they're going to say exactly what Dr. Feldman said in his report. In fact, they would be relying on the same literature that Dr. Feldman's quoting in his report. So let's get this settled. And that's how things work on a practical level. And that's why any physician, any specialty can learn to do this. So more specific answer to your question, thing that runs a close second to doing medical summary reports is to do these IME observations and IME rebuttals. Something that runs almost parallel to that in terms of requests is I answer specific medical questions in cases. So in terms of attorney language, what I'm doing oftentimes when I do that, most of the time when I do that, is I'm helping the attorney to either prove up or to let them know this wouldn't be a particularly good medical theory for the case. So obviously, in a legal case, there is a fact pattern, right? That's what attorneys call it. So I'm looking at the medical fact pattern and then drawing my conclusions from that. So to give you a simple example, I had a case of a 22-year-old woman who was rear-ended. She was stopped at a traffic light and rear-ended. 6 hours after the accident, she had acute appendicitis. So the attorney calls me and says, well, do you think that that's accident related? So I can tell you, when I was on the phone with this attorney, I'm thinking, no, there's no way, right? And so I went to the medical literature, and I found that blunt force trauma to the abdomen, particularly, in teens and young adults, can precipitate acute appendicitis. Well, in the accident, even though this 22-year-old woman was properly restrained, she was hit with enough force that she was pushed forward and smashed her abdomen into the steering wheel. So it was my opinion, to a reasonable degree of medical probability, that the accident was the immediate and proximate cause of her appendicitis and should be included as a damage in the case. So, and there's like 15 or 16 other kinds of fairly specific services I offer and other physicians offer.
I have a special offer for you today. I have created a list of the top 10 skills physicians need to be maximally effective in leadership roles. The skills I included on the list have been studied and found to increase the effectiveness of leaders in all organizations. You need to cultivate these skills when you assume a leadership role. Physicians are leaders not only in clinical settings, but in non-clinical settings as well. These skills will benefit you, whether you are at the bedside or beyond. Please visit my website at beyondthebedside.net/top10leadershipskills for your free copy of this excellent resource today. I will also place a link to this resource in the show notes. Feel free to click on that in the show notes below. Just listening to it, I can see how challenging and interesting it would be. How many hours per week do you spend doing this type of consulting?
Well, I do it full time. I should say I probably do it half time, because the other half of my time, of my 50 hours a week, is spent on training other physicians around the country to do this. But I've never actually kept a measure of cases. I always keep a measure of how many hours a week am I working. And so I probably spend 25 hours a week involved in cases.
Do you have a sense of how many physicians across the country are doing this type of consulting that you've developed? Are the physicians doing it all physicians that you have trained, or were there other avenues for physicians to get involved in this type of consulting?
Yeah. So, by the way, a small percentage of physicians do this full time like me. A number of physicians do this in lieu of retiring. The largest group of physicians do this as a part-time job in addition to their whatever their practice is. I would say right now there are probably a couple hundred physicians around the country who are actively doing this.
So can you walk me through this timeline? You started out completing your internal medicine and then psychiatry residency, and then begin working in this area of brain trauma rehabilitation. And it sounds like you developed sort of a national business model relative to that. Tell me, at what point in your career you begin developing the business model to focus on outpatient brain injury patients?
Maybe 25 years ago.
And then you ran that business for how long before you sold it?
Well, I started doing this new work about 13 years ago. So Okay. Yeah, that's kind of the time frame.
And it sounds like it was really just you found the niche almost fortuitously rather than, or I guess maybe it grew out of the expert witness that you were doing in the minor brain injuries, and you realized that this was just an opportunity to help support injured patients that really wasn't being filled at the time.
That's correct.
Did you continue to practice clinical medicine while you've been doing this work, or at the time you started this work, were you already full-time non-clinical?
Well, I was nothing, actually. I mean, I had sold my clinics. I was out of a job. And I was thinking about, well, what do I want to do next? And I thought, here's something that I've got a great interest in. I don't think anybody's doing this. And I thought, talk to some attorneys that I had worked with. And I said, hey, I've got this idea. What do you think about this? They said, yeah, we think that could fly. And I've been doing this ever since. And for the entire time I've done this, I've worked out of a home office. So I'm only doing for the past 13 years, I've just done this non-clinical work.
While you were running your clinics, your outpatient rehabilitation clinics, were you still practicing psychiatry or psychoanalytics at that time?
Yes, I was. I saw patients in the clinics. Now, obviously, in other cities, I hired doctors. But the way I established a clinic in a new city is I would go there. Well, the model was we would rent an apartment wherever we were, hopefully close to the office. And I would go every other week for some period of time until we staffed that up. And I would actually see patients in these other places.
And how many clinics did you eventually establish before you sold that business?
There were, I think like 19 at the end.
And so since that was an interstate business, you must have had to have maintained your medical license in several different states.
Yeah, right.
So at the largest point, how many medical licenses did you have to maintain?
Oh, probably. I don't think it was more than 15.
That's still just dealing with two on my own. I know that's sometimes.
Yeah, it was a while back too. Things were different then.
Yeah, yeah. As you developed this model, was there a particular mentor or person that you relied on during your career that you would say was most helpful or critical in helping you transition from a clinical into a non-clinical role?
By the way, I'll answer that in just a sec. But when I teach other physicians, I'm teaching in two areas. I'm teaching the business side. How do you run a successful consulting business. And I'm also teaching the medicine that you need to know. But when you asked me about that, I had some, my MBA is in the School of Hard Knocks. That doesn't mean that I didn't work with and hire and spent a fair amount of money in being trained and mentored by the business coaches through the
year. So by business coaches, you mean accountants, attorneys who specialize in small business management, that type of thing?
No, actually, people that work with small business owners to help them maximize what they're doing.
So these were people that you hired or people that you knew as friends?
They were nationally known people that do this for a living and had training programs, coaching programs that I participated in.
Are there any of those coaching programs that really stood out to you that were helpful that you would like to mention or that you can mention?
Yeah, well, this guy's retired now, but I worked with a guy by the name of Craig Proctor for years, really. And he was a mentor and coach to me.
The other question I have is, final question maybe, is what is the one lesson that you learned through your MBA of Hard Knocks that you wished someone who had already gone through the school prior to you would have told you ahead of time?
To make a business like this work, what I've done through the years is run small businesses that happen to be medical in nature. And so through the coaching I received, there are some tried and true ways to run a small business that's going to be successful. One of the things I'd recommend to, you know, now physicians are just employees, right, of big corporations or hospital systems or whatever. But if any physician wants to start their own small, their own medical business, whatever it is, first thing I would tell you to do is read a book by the name of, by a guy by the name of Michael Gerber. The principles that he has in that book, one of my mentors had a direct relationship with him. The principles with regard to how to run a successful small business. For example, you need a system for everything that you do. You have to work on your business, not just in your business. You should run your business as if it's a franchise. Everything spelled out, written down. These are all things that is going to make the difference between having a business that ends in chaos and disappointment and a business that ends up in success.
And what was the name of the book that Michael Gerber wrote?
It's The E-Myth Revisited, Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It.
I've heard of that book. I've never read it myself. I'll have to take your advice and read it.
Right. If you're starting a podcast business, I'd read it.
Great. Well, thank you. So what is next for your consulting business? What plans do you have going forward from here? What does the future look like for your business?
When I first started doing this and then realized I could train others to do it, it wasn't a smooth road. It was somewhat of a rocky transition, not because of the way I was running my business, but physicians thought I was training doctors to testify against them in medical malpractice cases. And there were a lot of misconceptions. I got a lot of nastygram emails and so forth. But that's a long time ago. So, and now it's kind of amusing in a way. Now I get emails saying, thanks for being a pioneer in the field. But the point of that story is that this work, at the bottom line, even though it's not clinical work, you are still helping people. And you are helping people using your medical knowledge to help people in a way that they previously could not, were not getting help. And you can see the tangible results of your work in helping injured people. And that's very gratifying. It's also an incredibly fun and interesting thing to do. I've learned a tremendous amount of medicine. I'm in no position to do orthopedic or neurosurgery, but I certainly would put my knowledge base of spine injuries, rotator cuff injuries, a whole variety of different conditions up against anyone, right? Because I've done all the research on this. I'm intimately involved in it on a daily basis. If a physician enjoys the process of lifelong learning, if they have some intellectual curiosity, if they love medicine, if they're not someone that just wants to stay in their lane And this is a tremendously interesting, stimulating, gratifying thing to do. It's quite lucrative, and it helps people. So what I see myself doing is continuing to do this myself, because I need to stay on top of what's what I think is the latest about this, but also to train others, other physicians to do this. I didn't invent penicillin or psychoanalysis, but I did start something new that physicians can do that helps people. And all I really want to do is continue to promote that and make sure that this stays in the armamentarium of what doctors can do.
So where can physicians who are interested in doing this work, do you have a website that they can refer to or somewhere?
Yeah. If a physician is interested in my training program, they can go to MD, medical doctor, BIZ, short for business, CON, short for consulting, mdbizcon.com.
Great. Well, I'll be sure to put that in the show notes as well so that we can link people there. And I'll include the E-Myths Revisited book in the link as well so people can order that if they're interested. But I appreciate you taking the time to visit with me today. This has been very interesting, and I'm sure my listeners are going to enjoy it.
Great.
It was a pleasure. Pleasure meeting you, and I hope
same here.
Well, maybe we'll get a chance to talk again. Do you do any in-person training right now, or has COVID pretty much eliminated that from?
For the last 8 years, I've had a two-day conference. This is a crash course in how to do this kind of work. Mm-hmm. This year and the year before, we did a live stream conference, actually turned the great room in our house into a temporary TV studio, and did a live stream TV production. But that was just at the end of April. So next conference won't be until next end of April, early May. So I do a conference once a year. And the other way that physicians can learn about this is through my remote training, my coaching program, my medical legal consulting coaching program.
Well, thank you again very much. Enjoy the rest of your day. I look forward to chatting with you again sometime.
Okay. Thanks so much, Norm. It's
all right.
A pleasure.
Have a good day. Well, that wraps up our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Armin, for taking the time to join me on the show today. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast. I will have the subscribe button included in the show notes, or you can click the subscribe button in your podcast player. The top 10 leadership skills and attributes you can sharpen are still available on my website. Please visit the website, physiciansbeyondthebedside.com. Leave your name and email address. I am happy to send you a copy of this valuable information. I would also like you to join my private Facebook page, Physicians Beyond the Bedside. Go to Facebook and search Physicians Beyond the Bedside. Ask for permission to join. I would be happy to have you join our community. There will be other valuable links in the show notes today. I will include the link to Dr. Feldman's website, as well as to the book that he mentioned in today's episode. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please don't miss the next one. And as always, good luck moving beyond the bedside.